This is unexpected. Well, not unexpected. I guess it's kind of expected. But this is a situation I never thought I'd find myself in. Right now, I guess.
And what situation is that, Sam?
The order just came down from Governor Inslee here in Washington State. We're at home. We are ordered not to go out except for whatever reasons, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's obviously me and Becky. Hello, Becky. How are you?
I'm well, Sam. How are you?
I'm okay. Because I really just hate doing the show, just because I can't stand talking to the person I live with, and because cabin fever is a thing and I need to talk to somebody else, joining us by remote is Shooten Tribble from the Holy Crap Vlogcast. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's nice to know that I was your last choice on the barrel. Thank you very much. Plenty of other people that you could have selected that from your astute group of people on your about page.
Well, I figured I really like having people in the studio because I can go off the way they look at, you know. And so that's why I've always tried to have three people in the studio. But if I can't have three people in the studio, shoot for the moon. And now we're doing, the Ask an Atheist Circus of the Atheist Podcast Stars, if you will.
Stars.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us about what you do in the atheism community?
In my case, I actually run a video podcast, hence it's actually termed Holy Crap, the Vlogcast.
Yep.
Over on YouTube. I kind of come at stuff from a skeptical point of view to not necessarily answer questions so much as to kind of do a deep dive into why various things matter. I've got an international group of people from very diverse backgrounds. Canada expat in Paris, France.
Nice.
Guy who is in the military. Another one who was in the military and medical trained, who grew up in one of the really quiverful movement type organizations and got out, fortunately.
Yikes.
That was kind of interesting. But, you know, I specifically set up my show to record at 12:05 a.m. in the Eastern time zone because I specifically wanted to be running counter to coast to coast AM. That's the entire reason at that time.
I love that.
Well, you sure tickled Sam there as a fan of Art Bell and coast to coast things.
I don't know if fan is really a the best way to put it, but yeah, I am. I have been appreciative of Art Bell's at least broadcasting style and love of amateur radio. I mean, I guess I'm kind of the I don't know. We have a lot in common there. Or did.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of dead now.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
Just a bit. So.
He's very stable, they would say, in the medical industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a lot of state change that can happen there.
I think in his industry, he would say he's in some other realm or.
he's hanging out with the Sasquatch, as they say in the parlance or something like that.
No, they don't say that at all.
They don't say that at all. No, they don't.
It's fine.
A survey by Pew Research.
Oh, fun at him.
What's that?
I'm sorry. I was saying I'm having so much fun at your expense. This is perfect. I'll be nice.
This is perfect. This is exactly what I was looking for. A survey by Pew Research reveals that more than 3/4 of evangelical Americans are confident in Donald Trump's response to the spread of coronavirus and believe that the crisis has been blown out of proportion by the media. This compares to 52% of Americans overall who believe Trump has underplayed the risks of the disease. Atheist agnostics and black Protestants had the lowest confidence in Trump's response, at a maximum of 20% being very or somewhat confident. Hispanic Catholics were more likely than any other religious subgroup to believe that the virus was a major threat to the U.S. economy, personal finances, the health of the general population, personal health, and one's day-to-day life in the community. The survey was conducted between March 10th and March 16th. So, Juden, as our new host, let you take this one away.
Yeah, what I found that was really interesting about this one wasn't the numbers themselves or where all those pieces were, although the idea of looking at a maximum of 20% being very or somewhat confident, I'm kind of guessing that the bell curve was a lot closer to the somewhat instead of very, but be that as it may, Hispanic Catholics more than any other religious subgroup, believed that a virus was a major threat. Somehow or other, that line got me. And the first thing that I thought of was what ended up happening after Puerto Rico was hit and all hell broke loose because of the weather and the response to it.
Right.
So we do have Puerto Ricans that are sort of still coming out of years at this point of the Hurricane Maria disaster and the way that the Trump administration, you know, threw some paper towels at it and called it good. The thing that came to mind for me amongst Hispanic Catholics was...
Well, if it was toilet paper now, it'd kind of work, wouldn't
it? That would work at this point.
Hey-o!
But in terms of Hispanic Catholics, I was thinking more of the non-citizen Hispanic Catholics or Hispanics in the U.S. that are within the community of undocumented and resident alien individuals who have right to fear and fear the way that the administration is dealing with things that affect them. And so looking at personal finances, personal health, your day-to-day life in the community, they're already seeing that Chinese individuals have been targeted with racist attacks. And, you know, the Hispanic communities in the United States aren't any strangers to these kinds of scapegoating. And so that's the thing that really struck me. When you look at the kind of like ticking time bomb that incarceration systems are, including detention centers, that's something that's of huge concern to health and stuff like that. So that was what struck me in terms of that Hispanic Catholics. The other thing that jumped out of me was Black Protestants, right? So you have atheists, agnostics, and Black Protestants. Not very often that those three categories are all lumped together. So I don't know, what did you guys make of that? I mean, atheists and agnostics, that I can understand, but what do you guys make of Black Protestants having the least confidence or the lowest confidence in Trump's ability to handle this crisis?
Shujin?
Oh, that one's easy for me. The absolute abhorrent racism that's been going on for the last, I don't know, specifically 3 years. No, actually we could bring that back to 11 years now,
yeah,
to how things have been going,
and the whole we could loop in the whole birtherism fiasco into this as well. I mean, if we're talking about the racism aspect of the current administration,
the problem of it is it goes beyond just the administration itself.
Absolutely,
this
true.
Is something so endemic, unfortunately, that we've seen have happened over the last, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's always been there. We just never saw it percolating up. And like I said, the last 10 years has been percolating. And, well, sooner or later, somebody's just going to go ahead and say, that's enough of that.
The way society has shifted and, the rise of the alt-right or whatever you want to call it, and just the fact that we didn't want to talk about this sort of thing for so long, I think makes it pretty clear, why we're in this particular demographic boat on this research. And then going back specifically to the current crisis, the president, the White House's report card on dealing with public health and emergency response has been terrible. Almost across the board, except in my mind, the only thing that I think there was a really strong response on was Harvey, and that hit Texas, where a lot of refineries are, while Rex Tillerson was still part of the White House. So I don't want to say, hey, that, follow the money, except perhaps maybe follow the money. Following the evidence and say we're not sure the White House is going to be doing a great job on this one, I think is a fair thing to say. On the other hand, not every part of the federal government is the White House. The CDC is not the White House, and they've made it very clear that they're going to do that they're going to do as much as they can in the interests of public health. Governor Inslee here in Washington is definitely not part of the White House. They sort of fight a little, and so they're going to make the right calls. And so, I mean, part of me wants to say, part of me doesn't want a recreation of what happened on 9/11, where there's an emergency, everybody rallies around the president, and then the White House uses that opportunity to pass some laws that perhaps we shouldn't have ought to have had. Like, I don't want to recreate that. So some skepticism is necessary. On the other hand, contrary to what I said last time I was on, this COVID-19 thing is definitely here. It is definitely a thing. It's something we have to pay attention to, and we have to pay attention. We have to listen to what the experts are saying at this point. And many of those experts are funded or paid or get their checks from the executive branch of the federal government. And so it's sort of, it's a very fine line that somebody like me, who follows evidence but doesn't trust this White House, has to ride in certain circumstances like this. So I don't want to spread, say, hey, don't listen to anybody, buy all the toilet paper you'll need for the rest of your life. But I also want to say, hey, don't believe what's coming out of the mouth of POTUS at this point.
I think that's a really good point. And when we see the experts giving this kind of advice and looking at these mathematical models, it's important to utilize that and then understand that we have, you know, a science-based approach that uses mathematical models that do make a certain assumptions, and having those above board of what those assumptions were to develop that particular model is a part of looking skeptically at things. So it's been a really cool sort of dive into that kind of process for me, as terrifying as it is at the same time.
Right. Shujin?
I got nothing beyond what you've got at this point.
Fair enough. This is the thing that I said, like, why I like people in is like, I can't go, hey, you got anything else? You can go, no, and then I can move on. But now I have to do it by talking. And this is a little bit of an insight in how I do the show. So fun there. I guess at this point I should say, the last time I was on the air, which was some weeks ago now, I said pay more attention to your flu shot than to COVID-19. Technically,
yeah, how'd that turn out for you?
Not that great. Well, I mean, except at the time it was true.
And let's be fair, it still is. It's just a matter that there's just another big bad that's on the block.
Right. Because at the time it wasn't clear that it was coming to Washington. I live in a state where vaccinations are often ignored, or being an anti-vaxxer is considered somewhat fashionable. So I wanted to use that point where, okay, you're worried about what's happening in some other country, but there are diseases here that you can catch and can harm you now that you should protect yourself against. And that was true then, but as time goes on, the things happened. And so I don't feel particularly bad about it, but the situation changes. I don't know, Becky, do you think that was a bad call of mine?
Or? I don't think it was a bad call at all. I think that the key point there is that we can prevent and protect ourselves and our communities against things like measles and influenza and meningitis and things like that. We can't right now protect ourselves with vaccines against this novel coronavirus. We can protect ourselves and our community by staying put and washing hands and not interacting with more than, you know, just our immediate circle that we have to interact with all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't think you were out of line, Sam. And I think that, you know, it shows that when situations change, you know, you have to be, and we are, open to the facts as they then present themselves.
I guess the problem is, I was saying that, and then there was a bunch of people in social media who were saying this other thing will never be a problem, which was not something I would mean to say. I was just trying to say what was true in the moment. I don't know. This is a bit of a mea culpa, I guess.
I don't think that you did anything wrong with it. If you consider at this point that if you were to get the flu on top of coronavirus, that's probably going to be a really bad couple of months of rehab, you know?
True. And if you have the flu while this other thing is going on and you need medical care, that medical care is going to be hampered somewhat by the current crisis. So there's that as well, I suppose. All right. I'll try not to feel bad. Moving on, Washington, D.C.'s Museum of the Bible has admitted that all 16 supposed Dead Sea Scroll fragments are forgeries. The private museum, created by Hobby Lobby founder Steve Green, has revealed last year that 5 were fakes and submitted all samples to analysis by the independent firm Art Fraud Insights. The team of analysts released a 200-page report detailing the ways in which the forged prices tricked scholars and antiquities dealers alike into assuming they were authentic artifacts. The report includes that each sample was created in the 20th century from ancient leather scraps coated in animal glue with intent to mimic real parchment fragments. The Green family has not disclosed how much money was spent on the pieces, but similar samples have reportedly fetched millions on the antiquities market. Shujin?
As somebody who's done leatherworking before, yes, I have quite the past. The idea that they were able to acquire, what do they call it? Ancient leather?
Yeah.
You know, just bravo right there. That's impressive.
It was suspected, as far as I waded through parts of that 200-page report, which is available online and we'll link to the show notes. It was suspected that they were able to obtain like Roman shoe leather from other parts of the Roman Empire from around the time period or within a few hundred years of that time
period. So if you sample the right part, the carbon 16 is going to give you, or not carbon 16, but if you sample the right bit, radiometric dating might tell you something kind of approaching the nearness
of the time period, exactly. Yeah. And they sprinkled some dust from the era in there as well, from like around the Dead Sea region.
Do you buy that all era dust?
Yeah.
Shop now for era dust. You want to smell like the 1920s? Era dust.
Well, yeah, and it was really the ink that tipped them off, because the ink was modern. But there were particles from the Dead Sea region. It was ancient Roman leather, but the ink was a new mixture, was a modern mixture.
So I saw this happen on social media. I saw this story float across on social media, and attached to it was a picture of one of these things, which I presume was the ancient leather that they poured animal glue on. And I looked on it, and when I was a kid, I had this truck that I had to move in a couple times. It was this brown... It was like a 82 Econoline van, and it was badly rusting. And it wasn't like rust was flaking off of it. And by flaking off of it, you're thinking like corn flakes or dandruff flakes, if I'm being gross. But no, these flakes were the size of dinner plates that were flying off this thing.
It's more like lily pad size.
Yeah, lily just woof, just huge. And these fragments of the Dead Sea Scrolls looked exactly like the rust flakes that would fly off this Econoline van. And so I'm like, wait, I missed out on a market here. I could have sold my truck off as a verified religious artifact. It would have been great.
I'm wondering if they kind of put the ink through mass spectrometer and said, why has Sharpie come up?
They did end up using mass spectrometers as part of their analysis. I don't know that Sharpie was among the chemical components.
Why wouldn't it be?
Can't rule it out.
I mean, if they're using modern ink, they're probably something like that. Maybe a felt tip marker or something like that. I have no visual style whatsoever. That's why I work in radio. And every time I had to use markers in art class, it was always a nightmare. Ah, jeez. Continuing on the Hobby Lobby train, Hobby Lobby owner Steve Green has vowed to keep his craft stores open nationwide because his wife received a 3-word message from God during a prayer warrior session. Guide, guard, and groom. Green has stated that the company's 900-plus stores will be increasing the frequency of store cleaning and will coordinate with medical care if any employees is suspected of having COVID-19 symptoms or known exposure. In a letter to employees, he also added that this is a time in which both the company and employees may need to tighten their belts to avoid going into debt. A Hobby Lobby clerk makes an average hourly wage of $9.63, according to Indeed.com. Becky?
This one really, really irked me, because you have a guy who is willing to spend millions of dollars on faked, you know, scrolls that are actually just Roman shoe leather, and have this extravagant private museum take the country to court over birth control and say, you know what, $9.63 earning sales associate, you're going to have to tighten your belt during this time of scarcity, right? So it irked the heck out of me that this guy who will portend to be pious, right?
Pretend.
Yes, he will have the pretense. I did mean pretend. Yes, he'll have the pretense of piety, but then liken himself to a low wage worker, saying, oh, both of us need to tighten our belts. It's like, you know, oh, there's poor people on both sides of this bank account. And to me, it just reeks of the hypocrisy that this supposed evangelical pious man will stoop to.
Shujin?
Yeah, I'm reading this over, and all I can think to myself is guide, guard, and groom. Maybe they were speaking in tongues, and it actually translates to shut it down.
Shut it down! Shut it all down!
I mean, that's assuming that it was a real message from a real caring God, but we're not going to go into that part right now, are we?
Well, I mean, given what the show is about, I think he can guess our opinions on that.
No.
Okay, maybe he doesn't have the money because he blew it all on Ford Econoline parts.
not even parts, just the flakes.
But this is American Christianity, American evangelical Christianity as it's at its finest. It's fully imbued with the prosperity gospel and your snake oil salesman who'd travel around the, you know, burned over district in the Midwest to sell you to stuff where you've got some guy on the television who covers his hand in baby oil and has you grope my hand through the TV to heal yourself from the virus. And literally a thing that has happened recently. This is what American Christianity is now. It is synonymous with American capitalism. So the idea that a company like Hobby Lobby would maybe tighten its belt a little bit more so that the people it depends on to make its money to buy Ford Econoline parts could live through this crisis. But no, they're going to have to tighten their belts, and we need to save money for this time for Renault parts or Opel parts, or we're going to get real smart here or something like that. And maybe not entirely an atheist thing, but it's getting harder and harder to discuss American evangelism without bringing in the economics of I guess late era capitalism into it.
I think you're completely right there, because someone who is very spiritual and purports to receive a message from God, even in those same three words, guide, guard, and groom, could interpret it in a completely different way. We've got to guard our workers by keeping them at home. We've got to guide them so that they can make the decisions to stay at home. So we're going to keep paying them sick leave while they're gone. And groom is...
Girl, wash your hands!
Exactly! Right? Like, someone could receive a message from God in those same three words and not have it continue to fatten their wallets.
Yeah. As far as groom is concerned, though, it could also be a message specifically to them. Groom the people to being the better people that you want them to be to help save everybody else.
That'd be nice. That
would be nice. Take heed, Steve Green.
Yeah. Oh, boy. And I think, finally, a story we've been following for how many years?
Ages?
Like 8 years? 6 years?
2014, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. The ongoing lawsuit by Bremerton's former high school coach Joe Kennedy hit another wall when a U.S. district court judge ruled that the school district was within its rights to dismiss him in 2015 when Kennedy refused to quit praying on the football field with his players. Judge Ronald B. Layton stated that the school district's right to restrict public religious expression on school grounds outweighed Kennedy's right to free religious expression. The court granted the school district's motion for summary judgment, denying Kennedy's motion to sue in district court after the U.S. Supreme Court had declined to hear his appeal last year. Is this it? Are we done now? Can you give us a...
Yes.
Yeah. Can we be done? Can you give us a sort
I
of
hope
a
so. I
eagle
hope
eye
so.
View of this one?
You've been asking. What? Didn't we already cover Joe Kennedy?
Yeah.
Apparently, even though the Supreme Court declines to hear your piece, he and his lawyers end up finding some other piece that they didn't end up including in their appeal to the Supreme Court, and where they say, oh, well, let's keep trying to sue on those grounds. So who knows? But the nice thing is that when you go for summary judgment, that literally is the okay. You're opting for summary judgment, not a jury trial. What goes? What the judge says goes. You're done. So I'm hoping that he can be done. You know, he uses the Alliance Defending Freedom for his
The American Christian Legal Union or something like that.
Yeah, it's the folks that will jump to defend anyone who is discriminating against gay folks because I don't know, because they're gay. I don't want to bake a rainbow cake. I don't want to make a flower arrangement. You know, those guys. And I think they might have finally hit their last wall, right? I think that we might just, I don't know, Joe Kennedy, just go coach at, like, I don't know, a Catholic school or a private Christian school.
There's 1,000 evangelical private schools who would be happy to take him in at this point.
And not even as a football coach. He could probably be a teacher.
Probably.
Yeah. There's a part about this that kind of irks me, though. The school district was within its rights to dismiss him when he refused to stop praying. I'm sorry, that wasn't their right. That was their obligation. Right. They didn't have a choice.
Good call. That was what Bremerton, the school district, had said. They said, this is what our lawyers say. This is there's long legal precedent for that. And that while you are an employee of the school, you cannot, you know, in the capacity of your, you know, role, lead prayer. You can have students come and lead prayer. That's cool. You can pray on your own. That's cool. But you can't say, all right, the game's over. I'm just going to, on my own, parade my bum in front of the whole place to go to the field, the middle of the field. And, oh, if they just happen to join me, so be it. We see through you, Joe Kennedy.
Or your pants, if he's parading his bum.
He's not really parading his bum. He's not. He is clothed. He is completely shod and clothed.
I just don't think I've ever heard you say anything like that before. That's amazing.
Are you advocating that this guy actually show off his shazbot to make sure that everybody can see how much of a tool he is?
No, I'm not. I was actually kind of scared when she mentioned it.
Okay. There was a behind-the-scenes joke about this.
Behind-the-scenes, indeed. Ah, yeah. So that's a little bit of atheism-related news. Now we got some emails to go through. This is a one of some import to both me and Becky, given it's about cats. It's about cats, all right? COVID-19, this is Colin from Seattle, who writes, COVID-19 has largely shut down our work, and we're looking for ways of being upbeat, silly, and have some minimal time with a few friends, a total of 6, including ourselves. Just so people don't take my head off, everyone who is invited to this has been isolating for the past week. We're not seeking fun at the expense of social responsibility. What we are celebrating, our cats become mature adult cats. So we decided to throw a catsignera party for one cat and a cat mitzvah for the other. Any suggestions for activities, ceremonies, or gifts for a fun-loving, irreverent cat celebration? Ever a fan and happily a patron, Colin.
Okay, so I am totally into this one because, as our listeners who have been following us on social media might have known, or in past episodes,
Today, Mr. Adventure is a man.
Yes, our kitty, Mr. Adventure, who is featured prominently on the Facebook page for Ask an Atheist, is 13, the traditional age in which young men or older boys become young men within the Jewish community. So we wanted to have a kat mitzvah instead of a bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah.
And I kind of wanted to have the cat mitzvah in place of my birthday party, but then somebody pointed out I was turning 42, and that's, you know.
That's also a special number.
That's the last special number. What's that?
Screw you, man. Screw you. As somebody who is older than that, yeah, you know what? Screw you.
I don't know. I forget. it had to be pointed out to me, and that's really the last interesting number between here and anything else, really. Like, that's the last number I care about. 42. Yay. Okay.
50. Okay. 50.
All right. 50. No, I don't. I've never. Mod 10 birthdays have always been the worst for me. 20 was crap. 30 was crap. 40. I mean, 40 was okay, but we didn't really do anything because there was a lot going on at the time. I mean, when I turned 30, I had just moved here and I didn't know anybody. And Becky was in the middle of some like real deep stuff for her master's degree. So I was like alone the whole day and it was really depressing. 31 was a totally different story. But so, yeah, I tend to ignore mod. I mean, yeah, I get that they're important dates, but in my life, numbers ending in zero have always been kind of a downer.
It's only half a century in Earth years anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
This is the abuse I signed up for. That's perfect.
Colin, I'm not sure that you and your family will be able to involve your six other friends or your four other friends by any means other than a remote videoing system, given Inslee's order to kind of shelter in place and not interact with lots of folks. But in case you are still having your katsanyera and your kat mitzvah, I do have some suggestions.
I was hoping you do, because I kind of let you run this one, because honestly, this is like your teacher-ness.
Oh, yeah.
Your teacher-osity.
I mean, yeah, you get sick of my spirit days for high school.
But it does have some utility when it comes to stuff like this, because you were incredibly creative. The birthday party, you had a whole bunch of stuff, and it was great. I wasn't expecting any of it.
Oh, it was themed. We had towel party favors for everyone, little hand towels. We had, yeah, just fun stuff. We had babble fishes that you could eat. Not to be inserted via the ear, but via the mouth at that point. So in terms of like all of the different little party things that you can do for, let's start with a kat mitzvah, right? Because that's for the younger of the two kitties. You're going to need to have some kind of yarmulke. That's the skull cap. And a prayer shawl would be good if the kitty will be able to like wear that. Maybe a bow tie, because you have to dress a little bit more formally for that. I would definitely recommend having some thematic Jewish food. And so what I had been planning for Mr. Adventure was to have a really, really nice plate of gefilte fish, because in our family, like, there's something that Sam eats and something that I eat that both are repulsive to the other, and both are essentially cat food, okay? For me, it's gefilte fish. Gefilte fish is sort of like a, imagine meatloaf, but using fish, using white fish scraps, just like the cheapest white fish that you can find. And then if it's just super, super cheap and not actually, like, nicely homemade and seasoned with, like, dill and herbs and stuff like that, it's just a chunk of meat that's a fish loaf that's suspended in fish stock jelly and eaten cold. So it kind of looks like a chunk of cat food pate. Sam's repulsive cat food thing happens to be pork liver sausage, which I had never encountered until I met him, because having grown up Jewish, it's not something that would be commonly found in
well, you've
my
probably
circles.
Been to parties that have pate, which is the nicer version of what I eat, which is Braunschweiger. So
yeah, so well, there's chopped liver.
Yeah, I had children. You had something to add?
Yeah, wait a second. Gefilte fish, what you're describing is the aquatic version of Spam. You know this.
Yes, yes, precisely. It is the aquatic version of Spam. So it's kind of like cat food. It's like a pate of cat food. Cats eat pate. So anyway, so I wanted to do a gefilte fish loaf for Mr. Adventure. So assuming that...
You're just bringing in my dietary thing just so that people don't get on you for liking gefilte fish.
For liking gefilte fish?
Yeah. Am I your cover here?
I actually, I don't know. I think that probably Braunschweiger is more appetizing than gefilte fish. Gefilte fish is suspended in the gelatinous cold fish stock.
I wouldn't care to make a comparison. But then again, when you start talking about gefilte fish that way, you make me think of head cheese, which I am not a fan of. So,
don't do the head cheese for your katsanyera or your kat mitzvah. It's a faux pas. That was a pun.
I got it.
Oh!
Really?
He's what you really? Can't see is that he's glaring at you.
Not a glare. Anyway, go on.
So I think also that you need to like have a Torah portion for the ceremony. And since, well, we're basically atheists, you don't have to, you know, like follow along to the actual one that would correspond to this particular date. So you should definitely choose the one where we talk about all of the like different animals and when they were named and how they were named, or the how the animals within one's purview still need to rest on the Sabbath along with the humans, because I just think that's funny. You have like your house cats that observe the Sabbath. I think that house cats think every day is the Sabbath. For the catzaniera, now that's a little bit more more in depth, because instead of just the prayer shawl and the yarmulke and maybe a little bow tie on the collar, you have to get a whole pink dress for this one. So the pink dress is the traditional color for that, and it's like super floofy. And this is where your guests, if you are able to have guests, if you are already housed and quartered with them right now, this is where they would come into play here, because in order to have a full quinceañera celebration, you need to have a dance, and it's choreographed. And if you search the internet, there are a number of different videos that are choreographed of kitties dancing to things.
Could we provide some examples in the show notes?
We could definitely provide our favorite examples in the show notes at atheist.radio. Each of those, you have a chambelán, which is like it's a chamberlain, and they're like one of the little grooms that they're like these little mini baby grooms that are dudes that are all dressed up in their little like matching tuxedos and stuff, and they do this choreographed dance along with the quinceañera girl and the other little girls that are in the dance party. And that would be amazing. You also need to put a tiara on the kitty. That's essential as well. So those are my biggest suggestions for the quinceañera and the kat mitzvah. Oh, for food for the quinceañera, you would need to have some kind of like chicken adobo or something like that. Maybe some chorizo. That's what I got.
Well, like I said, this is a place where Becky shines. This is I don't know if it's quite the where Becky around the campfire, but it's getting there.
I was going to say, the only thing that I can add is for anybody that's going to try to put a yarmulke on the cat, please remember that Bactine is still sold. You may need that at that point. Please don't get an infection.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Mr. Adventure is such a nice guy. I mean, he'll shake it off. He'll try to escape from it. He probably won't hurt you because he doesn't have a mean bone in his body. I mean, what happens when Ruth gets older?
Not certain at this point. She probably will not easily wear a pink dress.
No.
But she is already a ginger cat, so we might call that good.
Yeah, I think that's probably all right.
The other last thing for the quinceañera is that there's this tradition of the last doll, and it's like the doll gets passed around all of the guests, and like they put ribbons on it. And for that, you might choose a really, really beat up, beloved cat toy, like maybe a fuzzy mouse or like something that's completely bedraggled and that you really have been wanting to get rid of this whole time, and use that as the last doll and pass it around your party guests.
Nice. I will say I have some experience with this, because this one time when I went shopping, this one store had tiny top hats, and they had somewhat tiny top hats and then really tiny top hats, and they were perfectly sized for our two cats, because Mr. Adventure's got a huge head and Ruth has a tiny, tiny head. And I tried putting the hats on my cats, and Mr. Adventure was like, no, I'm not into this. No. Kept shaking his head, shook the hat off. I put the hat on Ruth, and Ruth tried to murder me in the face, and it didn't go well. Just keep that in mind. Bactine, as Shujin says, Bactine is sold in stores. Get some. And then finally, Owen from the internet. We're gonna go around the room on this one. Writes, why do hot dogs come in packages of 10, but hot dog buns only come in packages of just 8? Shujin,
that's just big bread. I honestly have no. Truth be told, I have really not ever thought about it. Although there was a time not too very long ago, I did find out that there is a brand of bread and of hot dogs that do sell in groups of eight specifically so that they match each other.
Blasphemy.
That's just great marketing right there, man.
Yeah. Becky?
Well, this has clearly been leading up to a time when 45 of our states have some form of school closures, and parents are forced to contemplate how the heck they can keep educating their kids while their teachers are frantically trying to do the same for their own families. This is your perfect real-life math least common multiple problem for all of those 5th through 8th graders working on how math relates to your real life. You weren't kidding.
That gets even worse, because then you have to start trying to figure out, all right, how much is this going to finally cost me when it's all done? Oh, right, I got to add tax.
Yep.
It's perfect.
Do I take a $50 bill? Do I take a $100 bill? Will they even take a $100 bill? Is this one fake? I don't even know. Do they take a Canadian money? I can't tell.
You're welcome, parents who have to, there you go. You've got your math problem for the week. Just set that with your kids. And how many can we do so you have no extra excess buns nor dogs?
So you've got, my take on this is hot dogs are in the package are kind of weird and gross and slippery. And so you got one that you just sort of expect will fall on the ground and like land in the cat food or something.
That's your discard hot dog?
And that's your discard hot dog. And then you've got your emergency weird person hot dog for the person who likes to eat raw hot dogs. We've all met that person. And they'll just take a hot dog and eat
it. No, we haven't.
Okay.
No, we haven't. No, we haven't.
I guess it's just me at barbecue. There's always somebody who's, oh, hot dog. Ah, ar, ar. Like, what?
No, you get the burnt one.
Yeah.
You get the burnt one.
Yeah, you get they're basically emergency dogs, they're practice dogs, they're discard dogs, they're the hot dogs that have the rules to poker on them that nobody ever reads.
They're the one that the actual canine dog jumps up to the counter to like snatch out of the bag before you can finish serving them to people.
Yes, exactly. They're crisis management dogs is what they are.
Shih tzus is what you're talking about. I get it.
Ah, well, hot dogs. That's a good one to talk about. I could really go for a hot dog, but I can't.
Everything's closed down.
Everything's closed. So we're gonna wrap it up here. It feels a little bit weird because we're only about I don't know, 40 minutes into it. But just to let you guys know, let the listeners of the show know, we're gonna be doing kind of foreshortened episodes of Ask an Atheist for the duration of this, as Becky and I are going to be working on a daily project here in Tacoma to get information about what's happening in the city and the closures and whatnot to people who may not have internet access through our radio station KTQA. So we're going to be spending a lot of time focusing on that. You can go to our website, ktqa.org, to find out a little bit more information about that. But we are still going to do regular episodes of Ask an Atheist. They're just going to be kind of short and a little bit more informal than we usually do with them, I think. Does that sound, Becky?
That sounds great.
And Shujin, thank you for joining us.
No worries. I'm, like I was telling Becky, I'm actually honored to be able to kind of give back to you guys for all the stuff that you've done for me and for the community. So thank you.
For several years, I've been trying to find a way to just invite some of the friends I've made around the country who aren't local on the show and find a reason to have them on the show. And this just sort of fell in my lap. And so I'm going to take the opportunity of it. So if people want to find you and go to your video show and see what's up, where should I send them?
All right. Well, there's two pizza bars that for the profession, don't call it professional. I don't make any money off of it whatsoever. For the podcast version on YouTube, you will find it. It's Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Of course, there is an associated audio only podcast. You can get that at holycrapthevlogcast.com. Fortunately, nobody had that URL. Imagine that. And for the personal stuff, which includes, amongst other things, I'm a furry, I'm a brony, I know, shut up, leave me alone, I know, I've heard it all, shut up. You can find me under the name Shujin Tribble. That's S-H-U-J-I-N. If you don't know how to spell Tribble, it's because you're not a Trekkie. That's okay. I accept you guys, too. However, there is there's one thing about everything that's kind of been a little on the weird side. We know full well that physically we can get out of our places once in a while, you know, walk around on streets and, you know, get some exercise. But the emotional and the mental part is a really tough one. I've been an online DJ in Second Life for over 10 years now, and I now view that as something that's really necessary to kind of help take people away from everything that's been going on for, you know, 2 hours a night. So whatever it is that folks need to do to kind of keep your mental and emotional well-being going, do that. Don't take any excuses from anybody. Just be safe, be happy as much as you really can. Be safe.
I'm glad you mentioned the DJ thing, because I think that's really fun. Go check him out, Shujin Tribble. And that's all the time that we've got for today. Thank you, Shujin. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you, Sam.
Our website is atheist.radio. Our Twitter is AskAnAtheistWA. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us anywhere else. Stay safe. Stay hydrated. Stay, wash your hands, whatnot. We'll see you guys next week.